SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to SiriusXM online and at our website, stevebick.com. I don't know why in the headset, I guess I sound like Mitch. It's kind of a different sound. I don't know what. That's kind of funny. It's just my voice resonating in my head. The weekend dust still settling, and I got so many things. I mean, it was an emotional weekend. I don't think there's a better way to frame the last, you know. Well, particularly Saturday, I guess. The situation at Arlington dominated Saturday, I think, on the national stage, right? And we're going to talk to Hugh Robertson in about, 18 minutes. And I imagine that, you know, particularly for Mid-America Racing Cognoscenti, there was real satisfaction in having a Hugh Robertson win the feature on Saturday. Because if you want to talk about quintessential American horseman trainer, you couldn't have picked a better. I don't think you could have picked a better guy. That part of the story was really, I thought, very special. The entire day, and especially through the lens of, you know, the social media prism, was just dripping with anxiety. I think that's fair, right? Every single conversation and viewpoint, almost, it was framed through, last big day, last Arlington Million, last trip to Chicago. And so it was so sad on that front that it made, the race results, I don't want to say secondary, because they obviously aren't, but it's made it hard to enjoy what transpired. I think it's obvious, and I know people are listening to the listen to the replay from Friday, and people really enjoyed hearing from John Dooley. And appreciated that feedback, and obviously Marcus and Eddie on hand there, and almost everybody included, some reflection on what was going to happen. And then once the racing started, you got essentially, and I suppose other than the longest price in the the history of the race at 27-1, two Emmys. It really didn't take long for you know the boo birds regarding jockey tactics. It didn't take them long to cut through the the fog of sadness. they jumped right aboard. the result was not impossible by any stretch. I mean, two Emmys from a performance standpoint is actually a gelding that had actually been making progress and had been, you know, kind of a slow, steady improvement. You know, between you and son Mac Robertson, the way they operate, and his Arlington performance, you know, beating the neck by Busy Channel. And it's funny because when it came for me to, not that Busy Channel, you know, was a horse that I thought, and I needed to cover even as a C, but my fourth horse was Busy Channel. And I basically was weighing between Busy Channel and two Emmys as a inclusion with domestic spending. And the disappointment, obviously, was Armory in there, who just kind of gates opened. And Ryan Moore never mounted anything. And I don't care how slow they were going. Zulu Alpha didn't run either. Neither put in any run at all. Domestic spending, you know, to Flavian Pratt. I mean, Flavian Pratt just is, you know, seems to elevate everything. And, you know, Pratt, I think, recognized that he had to be a little closer than he'd been in the, you know, the wins at Churchill and Belmont. But nothing is going to take away from James Graham, who certainly, you know, knows his way around that oval, and two Emmys. So English Channel, who just is tough as nails. And these horses particularly, you know, as they mature. So a new Grade 1 winner for English Channel, and just great for you, Robertson. We'll talk to him in 10, 12 minutes, and really looking forward to that. So, you know, the emotion that was involved in Chicago, we won't talk to Eddie Keneally today. He's on a plane, but that's a very nice colt, the Point of Entry, Home Wrecker Racing, sophomore, Point Me By, and you know, to me, he seemed, you know, the horse to beat, and then went out and ran his race, a little under 2-1. He and Tango, they that Ginsburg did run well for Rusty Arnold, ended up third in here, and you know, from a rooting standpoint, I kind of was rooting for like a Salt Shaker, and I never got around Saturday to tweeting about it. But for E.T. Baird, it was a chance. You know, he's won grade threes and grade twos, but he's never won a grade one. And I thought, you know what, this may be a really, you know, good opportunity for E.T. Baird at 50-something, 52, 54. And after, you know, he missed a big chunk of time last year or the year before, he was out for, you know, for a period. So I thought maybe like a Salt Shaker. And also, you know, he was going to be a decent price. But Point Me By was the horse. The performance, obviously, of the day that resonated and is going to stand up going forward. Santa Barbara. Holy cow. This is some nice filly. And Ryan Moore, It didn't matter about this pace either. Mean Mary was out there, and Mean Mary ran great. She did what she does. And Mean Mary on the lead, but Ryan Moore just inching up, and then I don't know what he, you know, does he smooch? Ryan Moore does not strike me as a smoocher. Ryan Moore asks Santa Barbara and the Camelot filly just, you know, I wouldn't say she's explosive per se, but she cruises, you know, she's got kind of that European sports car acceleration, you know, as opposed to American muscle car acceleration. And she wins the Beverly D. Coolmore and Aiden O'Brien, of course, and we'll see about her plans. And in the Pucker Up, too, that Shanta Sara for Chad and for Michael Dubb, and who else is in that? The Matticat group for Sol Cumin and Bob LaPenta. No Mike Caruso in this one. But the Coolsty filly and the she got that just went favored over Oyster Box, and they run 1-2, and in fact flown for Brendan Walsh. It kind of arrived on the scene a little late. So the graded stake portion of the card, it was certainly not disappointing. I know the million, the Mr. D, I think might have frustrated some people, but it came off successfully, let's put it that way. And the Illinois portion of the card had a nice smattering, actually, including Ravelli with Richie's in the House winning that Addison K-Mac. And Ravelli also, by the way, yesterday at Ellis, that juvenile that he talked about, Roger McQueen. Yeah, Roger McQueen, very good in the juvenile yesterday at Ellis. We'll get to the Ellis stuff in a little bit. But Ravelli, Chicago, and in the Black Tie Affair, the nightcap, that another mystery, you know, he looked like a slam dunk and absolutely was at 40 cents on the dollar. You had earlier on the card. I did not see the first couple. Oh, Get None, the Biondetti mare that actually Ravelli and PD Racing bred. This for Hugo Rodriguez and Hermio Racing Stable. With Chris Amy. Yeah, that was the Isaac Murphy. And there was one more, too, wasn't there? There's the Spellman. Bramble Queen, who scratched out of the graded stake for Mike Denny and wins that one. I don't know what I've done with that. And Loveberry with a pair. Loveberry leading the jockey standings at Arlington. So I know so many people that, and I'm sure we'll catch up with some of them about, you know, making a pilgrimage essentially to Arlington. Some people that had never been there, and others that you know, felt they absolutely had to be there for this. Difficult circumstance. The emotion, though, was not confined to the city of Broad Shoulders. The Saturday card at Saratoga had its own drama, and if we jump straight to the the stakes portion of the card, the Saratoga Special and the four-star Dave, they both had their own scenario that played out. And that, let's start with the Special. And, you know, you've heard, obviously you've heard, and you may hear from him today, actually, Lee Einsiedler, that on the show any number of times over the years, and is a good friend. And he's a friend to countless people in the game. And this past week, leading into Saturday, and you know, of course, Casa Creed was going to run first in the Troy, and, you know, the lousy draw way outside, the option to run for a grade one, a richer purse, and so forth, and in the four-star Dave was irresistible. And then came the two-year-old, and so it was going to make for a big day for Lee and his son Jeffrey. Mike Francesa and his family are partnered in the horses, too, with Lee. But it was also a week that, you know, was fraught with, you know, the ongoing sadness of the family tragedy last year. And that was going to weigh heavily on Lee and Jeff and everybody. And so it was a week of high emotion. And here was High Oak making a second start in a big spot, in a grade two at Saratoga. And, you know, the whole meet, you know, Lee treasures the opportunities, and whether it's a New York bred maiden 40 or whether it's the grade one four-star Dave and grade two Saratoga Special, it's a tremendous, you know, source of pleasure, and he anticipates the opportunities eagerly. So when High Oak, the Gormley colt, that Lee picked out in a, he joined us on TV yesterday, Seth and I, and the story that's involved with why he bought a Gormley is entertaining enough. And now and I'm sure we'll get to that. And to then have, you know, the horse essentially run the race that you know, that Lee and Bill Mott envisioned. And we should throw in Junior Alvarado and his agent Mike Salito. I mean, they you know, everybody had a certain vision of how, you know, potentially the second start for High Oak could go, and then to have it play out exactly as anticipated. And it's funny because the 11 hole, no good for Casa Creed in the Troy, but it was very good for High Oak in the Saratoga Special. The open air outside box, where the air is fresh and clear, the Marty McGee. this is some nice colt. And he turns around and was just outstanding. And you know, this is a horse that by all rights, by pedigree, and by, you know, physical properties, really shouldn't have been as good at 5.5 as he was breaking his maiden down at Belmont. So this is just 6.5, and he was just cruising when he took control at the top of the stretch. You know, I'm sure the champagne, you know, in fact, you know, they, Bill Mott at first said, well, don't be surprised. We may think about the hopeful, but no, they're going to wait for the champagne, which makes perfect sense. It was, first of all, it was a pleasure. You know, I was sitting in the adjoining box. It was a pleasure to be there with Lee and his son, you know, to his right, and friends, and you know, to watch everybody in and around, you know, where you know, where Lee has been sitting for many years now. The pleasure that everybody took on his behalf is what this game is supposed to be, and at its best, which is everybody happy for anybody that, you know, has that moment of pleasure. And it's why we bet, it's why we breed, buy, sell, everything that goes on is meant to distill into that opportunity and fulfillment. And it was really a joyous scene and special. And I think anybody that it had to translate to everybody that was on hand and watching. So that was, you know, as I'm trying to reflect, I mean, that was from an emotional standpoint, from Chicago to Saratoga, it was all different kinds of emotions that were on display. And that continued. It continued half an hour later. Actually, we should include it right into Mark Hasse winning a third four-star Dave in five runnings. Yes. And two of them with a now six-year-old bear. It got Stormy. You know, one thing that you don't think of until after, you know, you're watching your multi-race tickets explode into Tinder, is they named the race for four-star Dave, who won 6 years in a row and loved Saratoga, the Sultan of Saratoga. And you realize, this mayor loves it up here. And the workout reports were glowing. She looked fabulous, and she got a terrific, she also got a terrific ride. And at the age of six, Tyler Gaffalione, kind of making up for some miscues earlier in the week. We may have to get to that, but it was a tremendous performance. And I don't know if she's going to, you know, she's going to go to Kentucky Downs and so forth, and then, you know, the Breeders' Cup. And if she doesn't, you know, if she doesn't reprise this kind of a performance elsewhere, I don't think it matters. I just was shaking my head. And I've been a huge fan of this mare. And in fact, you know, 2 years ago when she won the two races in 7 days, 6 days, we really kind of were all over that. I'll tell you one thing. It was a great hour. You saw Ned Toffee being interviewed from Spendthrift. It was a very good 35 minutes for Spendthrift Farm. That's for sure. Between a Gormley colt becoming the first, his first graded stake winner. And of course they got Jimmy Creed, got a grade one placing for Casa, and then of course they bought controlling interest, my racehorse involved as well in Got Stormy. So it was a very productive graded stake pairing for Spendthrift, very much so. So that was the Saratoga emotional scenario, and there was real, you know, this is the kind of horse, and this is why mares are invaluable to the sport, because they stay around. And Mark Cassie, who, by the way, and I haven't gotten to this yet either, of the news for the weekend, Mark is actually sick and wasn't on the track. I'm not sure about yesterday, but he was home in bed sick this morning. So he won't join us till tomorrow or Wednesday to take some bows. And we've got some things up at Woodbine to talk about with Mark Cassie. The big weekend for Gary Barber, as it happens. Particularly at Woodbine. Gretzky the Great won the Greenwood. Olympic runner won the King Eddie yesterday. And a big performance. But forget those two. There's a two-year-old filly that somehow Gary Barber managed to dig up and saw. I'm not two-year-old. She's a three-year-old. A super speedy named Miss Speedy. That he, if you didn't see this after the King Edward yesterday, we were driving home. We went to see my father in Manchester. So we were driving home and you know, getting a chance to, you know, to watch stuff because Tina drove. That's the beauty of. And so Woodbine was on the simul screen with the four, you know, on RTN with the four racetracks that I had up, and I'd be real interested to find. Well, can't wait to talk to Mark. Forget the stake winners. Forget the Grade One. I want to know about Miss Speedy. So anyway, so much. I'm wandering off into the woods here. I got to be careful. We're going to get you, Robertson. We should reach for you. In fact, here, Case, let me. It's been a while. Mostly we talked to Mac, but I absolutely was not missing a chance to talk to you, Robertson, today. And so let me, Case, let me give you this. I'll tell you. So frustrating. There we go. Got it. All right. We'll get you, Robertson, in here. And boom. There you go, Case. We've also got the sale day one to talk about. Very, very nice first night of the sale. In fact, outpacing the sale 2 years ago. We'll talk about it. Rich Migliori, of course, is going to join us early in the second hour. And in fact, I just heard from Rich, and it might be a little bit, maybe like in the 10-15 range, which might work fine, actually. I'll tell you one thing. Rich's son, Joe, with his bloodstock business, he was super active yesterday. It seemed like every fifth hip was signed for by Joe Migliori. So some sale feedback. In fact, on the sale front on the New York Breds, expect that Leray Visage going to join us from Rock Ridge. I want to get his input, and we've got our two mares at Rock Ridge, and it's probably the best, maybe the best farm around to visit, because you go to Rock Ridge, you go visit your baby and your mare, and then you go to Hudson, and you go antique shopping, and you go for lunch. Can't beat it. It's easy, actually, off the, whether you're on either side of the river, off the thruway, across the Mid-Hudson Bridge there, and you can go up to Olana. Have you ever been to Olana? Frederick Church's home, high on the bluffs. It's awesome. I could give you a whole itinerary. Casey's telling me that that use phone is going straight to voicemail. Nothing, there's no text from, Casey that I don't like to see more than that. Let me text them again. And because he was good, you know, when you're constantly, you know, tying people in and you know, bringing people on and stuff, you know, you send out texts and some people are very responsive, others are less so, and you is not, you know, I don't think I've ever gotten anything other than a yes or an okay over the years from you. Mac is a little bit more talkative, so I'll let Casey keep efforting, right? Okay, we just heard back actually. All right, Casey, he said okay. He should pick up probably next ring. We've got probably today we will not get to the Jockey Club Roundtable, which was presented via video, essentially. They taped the whole thing and spilled it out. You know, it's at the Gideon Putnam. And it's, one of the off-track highlights of the summer, and there's a lot of things in there to discuss. Matt Hegarty is in town this morning, actually. A number of people following up from the, you know, typically the Jockey Club Roundtable on the Sunday, and then the Albany Law Conference the next couple of days. So they're at the 1863 Club today and tomorrow. And so a lot of people together, and we'll probably tomorrow talk to Matt Hegarty. I'm going to go over to the track tomorrow, and we'll do it from there. Matt Hegarty and Eric Hamelbeck will get their feedback and their reaction to elements of the presentation, and of course, you know, you heard from Dave O'Rourke, and when Dave was with us, 10 days ago, and he talked about, you know, the presentation he was going to have yesterday in the round table, and a lot of gaming. Issue, long-term prospects, and as you heard from Dave, you know, and his expanded comments to the roundtable, he was very bullish. He thinks that there's plenty of room for the sports wagering product to be integrated, and NYRA doing what they can to position themselves in that. I'm having trouble doing both things here, Case, to reach him. And the opportunity for NYRA to, you know, make the deals that they've been making with partners on this front, and it seems like there's more of that's in the offing. So we'll get, I think, the roundtable coverage tomorrow. I don't think Matt. I didn't see Matt's. Usually Matt, I'm sure he's, you know, he had to watch it on like everybody else on video, and I haven't watched the whole thing either. So there is one part of it that is quite intriguing, actually. And if you didn't see this, I know the only story that I read was Frank Angst, but the idea that has come up on the show over the last few years, in fact, with Jerry Brown specifically, the concept of what they term, what they're calling an exceptional performance evaluation tool. And that concept is basically, you know, the use, the integration of speed figure numbers into an algorithm to identify, and they're calling it exceptional performance. You could also call it, you know, aberrant, outlier performance, you know, move up performances that are difficult to explain readily. And so this project, which I know that Jerry Brown and Thorograph was being incorporated, we've talked about this for 3-4 years that this was going to happen, and apparently it is going to be a big part of what HESA, what, you know, their monitoring and their involvement is going to include. So that is one element of the roundtable that was explained or elucidated. So I'm anxious to hear more about that, and using you know, Thorograph figures. Well, Case, he's texted me back. Here's what we're going to do, Case. Let me send you our number. How about that? And have I don't know why your phone is not able to reach him, but I'm not doing something else first. I want to get you here. Let me do this. Can you call them? Yeah, there we go. We have the famed the famed 800 number, which isn't used as much as it used to be. Huh, that's very strange. All right, no problem. All right, I sent you, Robertson, our number, so he'll call in ideally. And we will hear from Leray Visage from Rock Ridge in a little bit. And here's you, Robertson, the man of the weekend, if there ever was one. You, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You, I said to you this morning earlier that, you know, if somebody wrote a script to what very well may be the last Arlington Million, to have a horseman like you win this, it made it, I don't know, it made it, I thought, even more special than the day was already going to be.
Well, thank you.
Talk a little bit about going into this opportunity, and certainly two Emmys ran well in the Arlington, but, you know, you had to approach it one way with James Graham. Talk about, you know, preparing for this and watching that unfold.
Well, I really didn't intend to run him in it, but there was nothing else for him, and I was very worried about carrying 126 because he's a small horse and he's never done that before. But I thought the race, other than domestic spending, and maybe Aidan O'Brien's horse was coming up fairly light. And two Emmys always gives a good account of himself. So I went ahead and entered him, and probably against my better thinking, but anyway, it all worked out fine.
Talk about the way, you know, the discussion. I suppose, you know, he's not a hard horse to make a game plan with.
No, he doesn't need to be in front, but he runs well when he gets the front, and he's very rateable. I mean, he'll come from off the pace, but the race looked like there was very little speed in there, so I just told Jimmy to go to the front and slow it down as much as he could, and he did a great job.
Were you surprised that nobody took the bait or nobody came calling to, you know, to apply any pressure?
Well, not really. I mean, that's the way these races run anymore. They're just, I don't think riders have much of a clock in their head anymore. And probably didn't realize how slow we were going and figured I was going to back up. So, but domestic spending laid closer than usual, I think. And
yes,
was right there, really. He just, and he, you know, made his run and couldn't get by. You know, so.
No, and it set off a pretty joyous scene. We'll talk about your partners, Wolf Racing, in a minute. But James Graham had ridden him successfully, and what's interesting about his involvement, he rode him as a younger horse, and this is with English Channel, like so many of his progeny, as they become mature horses, small incremental improvement.
Right. So that's what we had a few small problems with this horse as a young horse. I never ran him too hard. I think he broke his maiden for 20 here on the poly track. But I don't like to overmatch my horses, and we had bought him very cheap, and so I kind of tried to keep him in spots where I knew he'd be competitive, and he just kept getting better and better.
It's a story that gets repeated with these English channels over and over again. And, you know, you mentioned buying him inexpensively. There was a flood, of compliments directed to you and Mac, not just your horsemanship, but your ability to pick out a horse at a, I won't even say a square price, but a bargain price, and then the patience and the experience to craft them into having successful careers. I mean, it's so many different people that, you know, have known you and either worked for you or in barns near you, the outpouring of appreciation for you and your ability was widespread.
Well, thanks. I'm not a patient person by nature, but with my horses, I try to be very patient. So, and it generally works out. People don't wait on their horses anymore.
Well,
and some of these horses need the time.
How much of that is simply a matter of, you know, being able to educate owners and to coach them to be patient?
Well, that's a big part of it. I've got good owners, and none of them give me any pressure and let me do what I want to do. It makes it a lot easier to train a horse. I tell these people, really, I've got a lot of partnerships, but I said, believe me, I said, if you're a partner with me, you've got virtually no say. I'm going to run it the way I want to run it. If you don't like it, don't be a partner with me. And I think they all understand that. So,
this is the kind of reward that comes along with it. What, you know, this was a Keeneland yearling, and of course we're weeks away from 4,000 hips going through. This was this must have been book 5 or 6, right?
Oh, I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was late book. I just liked him. He was a late foal, and we had just actually, Wolfs and I had just bid on one and didn't get it. That went for like 40,000, 45,000. I said, there's a little horse coming in next that's not going to bring anything. I said, I like him. Let's just buy him for whatever he brings. And we bought him.
Unbelievable. $4,500, you. When you're looking, and there's going to be so many people that are going to head to Keeneland, and in the late stages, what differentiates a horse that goes on your short list and a target? What differentiates them in terms of picking out a bargain? What works on a horse like this when you're looking at the page?
I just look at the way a horse moves.
Just
the walk. If they have a nice, easy way of moving, they'll usually be a racehorse. It doesn't make any difference how they're bred. And if you take your time and let a horse develop, there's a lot of horses that are simply ruined because they're pushed too hard too early. And, horses really shouldn't even be broken to ride until they're 3 and probably shouldn't run until they're 4 because they're not fully developed. But because of the economics of the game, you just can't do that anymore. I mean, I try to bring all my horses to the races at 2, and some of them run, some of them don't. They don't generally run early. I think I've got a 2-year-old in Friday. It's the first one I will have run. And I generally just get our young horses ready, and then Mac takes them. When I find one that can run, Mac says, I'll take that one. And which is probably all right, because he does a great job. But
yes, he does. And you and Matt, you guys have made a history of passing the horses, back and forth depending on season and depending on the circuit. And Mac had 2 Emmys for sections of seasons here the last couple of years.
Yeah. Well, we got really unlucky with 2 Emmys last year. He took him out east because I didn't go to the races. I stayed home
right.
because of COVID. And we kept getting rained off the grass out east when they had him out there. And, I mean, he just is not the same horse. He runs okay on the poly track, and he's okay on the dirt, but certainly nothing like he is on the grass.
No doubt. And he did have that nice allowance performance last winter, early in the, before COVID hit. He had that good second behind no less than By My Standards, actually,
yeah.
At Fairgrounds, right? Yeah.
Yeah. That was on the dirt. But he's just not the same horse. I mean, he tries on anything, but, it's just you get a grass horse. They want grass, mostly. And he may, because some of the horses by English Channel have been good poly track horses, too.
Yes.
And I haven't had a chance to run him in a decent race on the poly track. Of course, the poly tracks are kind of a thing of the past anymore. People are taking them out wherever they can. And there's a few left, I guess. I think Turfway's back. Oh, it's not a poly track anymore. It's a...
The Tapeta.
Tapeta, I think.
Yeah.
But...
Now, and Woodbine. The Woodbine, and there's a real chance that New York is going to add one. Gulfstream's putting one in as a third surface.
Yeah, I know. I heard they were putting one in. But generally, they put them in as kind of a fail-safe,
Yeah.
There's most of these winter tracks would probably be better off if they put them in. The thing is, these poly tracks don't last as long as they thought they were going to. I mean, they wear out. The thing with the Tapeta is, I think Dickinson pays a pretty close attention, and they come out and check on those tracks, and they try to kind of do some work on them once in a while and keep them decent. the thing with this Polytrack, like here at Arlington, it's been here for I don't know how many years, and they don't even make Polytrack anymore, I don't think, anywhere. So
no.
It's worn out, and it's not a good surface. But the thing is, they put these Polytracks in Europe, and they do work okay in Europe, but they don't run the extended meets that we do here in the United States. And plus the weather, they talk about cold weather. Believe me, it doesn't get nearly as cold in Lincoln as it does in Chicago. In England.
Yeah.
And so it's a whole different story over here.
You mentioned last year, and you know, you had had, you know, in going back a couple of years, you'd had a bit of a health scare, and what has kept you, you know, what has kept you going? What you know, because you know, you probably could step back and you know, maybe do some of the bloodstock things and let Mac handle, you know, the afternoon activities and the training. What has kept you motivated?
Well, like I say, last year I stayed home with because of the COVID, just stayed home in Nebraska, and my wife said I was going to drive her crazy. and basically she said, I have to be out and see my horses and be around them. You know, there's an old saying that no trainer ever committed suicide with a decent two-year-old in the barn.
Exactly.
And that's right.
Exactly right. Exactly. You know, you mentioned Nebraska, and there may be some very exciting times ahead. It seems like the pendulum.
Well, I hope so. I hope
right?
we get it going again.
The Columbus, there's prospects for a real authentic full-service racetrack in Columbus, yes?
Yeah. Of course, now we've moved to Omaha. We used to live in Schuyler, a little town about 15 miles away from Columbus. We bought a house in Omaha a few years ago. So if I end up going back there, I'll be traveling around anyway, because they don't run. I think the big meet will probably run in Lincoln, but I'm not sure.
Well, it's amazing. I lived in Kansas City in the 80s, and you know, got to Exarban, and you know, used to have this conversation with Jack Van Berg and Frankie Brothers and Scooter Dickey, and you know, there's such a great culture. You know, talk a little bit about you know, growing up in the game, and you know what Mid-America racing was. It's different now, obviously, and the prospects of no Arlington is difficult to imagine. But let's be honest, the idea of no Exarban was difficult to imagine.
Well, that's right. Like Exarban was a beautiful racetrack, like this one is here. This morning, it's 70 degrees, and I'm sitting up watching my last set train. Beautiful day, and it's a beautiful track, but corporate greed just has won out and is going to end up ruining a lot of tracks. And that's all it is corporate greed. There aren't very many people anymore that care about horse racing. Let's face it, it's not a sport that Americans, you know, appreciate. Because it's a thinking man's sport, and Americans don't want to think. They don't want to put any work. They want to go out, pull a lever on something, and get instant gratification. You don't get instant gratification with horse racing, but if you stick with it long enough, it's the best game in town. And fortunately, I think COVID may have helped horse racing. Because a lot of the gamblers had nothing else they could bet on, and they started betting on horse racing. Hell, Grand Island in Bonner Park was doing $10 million handle a day because people didn't have anything else to bet. And these compulsive gamblers started betting on horse racing, which, you know, helped. Like they said, horse racing did well in the Depression because people were broke and they wanted a chance to go out and make some quick money. So they went to the horse racing. And it's a dream. So
it is. It is. I know I've asked Mac, and I'm sure we talked about it with maybe with Hotshot Anna. But your origins in the game, how quickly as a young man did you know that you were headed into the game?
Well, I was in college and at Nebraska, and I decided to take a semester off and go to the track and work, because we had always went to the races, though we didn't have race horses. We lived on a little farm, and we always went to the track. And I took the semester off, and I just decided I was in pre-law. I decided to go into an honest profession, so I became a trainer instead of a lawyer. So, but that was how it happened. I just got to working at the track. I worked for the old trainer, Bob Lee, Robert E. Lee, old Red Lee, who was a big trainer in Nebraska, and I just never got away from it.
How long did you work for others before you started?
Oh, I was 20 years old when I got my first license.
Wow.
The first year I went to the track, I bought a horse from Frank Kirby at Exarban, and it won the first two times I ran her, and then basically I was hooked. I had my trainer's license. The old steward, old Noel Chillicutt was the steward at Exarban then, and when I went in for my license, he said, "Well, you want to be a trainer, huh?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, I guess the only way you're going to learn is to do it." And he signed my application, and that was it. And that was 51 years ago, I think, in 1971, or 50 years ago, whatever.
Yeah. That's funny. There was no trainer's quiz? He didn't have a couple questions for you?
Didn't ask me anything. He said, But I think I'm sure Bob, who I was still working for at the time, I'm sure Bob Lee went in and told him I was okay. And I'd never taken a trainer's test in my life.
That's so funny. There's nice things about having formality. But I've heard that same kind of story from a lot of veteran horsemen, that somebody vouched for you and a steward looked you over and made sure you were you weren't going to be a problem around the backstretch and signed off and on your way you went. Talk a little bit too, if you would, about building a client base, because one of the things that has been a challenge in the modern era, is that not everybody, and certainly older horsemen in particular are. Not going to go out and advertise themselves, and they aren't necessarily marketers of their services, and it's been a challenge, and there's a lot of capable horsemen that have actually left the game because they aren't adept at drawing new owners.
That's the problem. Anymore, everybody wants to give their horses to two or three of the top trainers. They end up training hundreds of horses.
Yeah.
And the little guy, and a lot of the little guys are just as good a trainer, but they never get the opportunity. My opportunity came when I got Polar Expedition. And people started noticing, I guess, and because I'm not a promoter either. I don't go out and hustle horses. So I would still be, if I wouldn't have come up with him, I'd probably still be training six or seven horses somewhere. But to tell you the truth, I get just as much satisfaction out of winning a $5,000 claimer as long as the horse tried hard as I do of winning that race the other day. It's a funny game. People don't understand that a horse that gives you 100% is the one I appreciate. And even if they're cheap horses, if they go out and run hard, run up to their capabilities. They're good horses. And it's just like with human athletes. Some of them have a lot of ability, but no try in them. You got to have a horse that's got some try. And most of them, well, some of them do. Say some of the cheap horses have a lot of try in them, too. But it's a funny game.
Well put. And, I mean, it's really not something, I mean, you can train a horse to finish. You can do things with them in the morning, you know, to try to get them to understand, you know, what they need to do to win. But, they also are flight animals that have a pecking order out there. I mean, how do you train a horse that doesn't think it should be out in front?
Yeah, they are pack animals, and you just try to do your best job you can with them. And trainers don't win races; the horses win races. Jockeys don't win races. You got to have the horse. And I don't think a lot of trainers don't understand that either. They're not winning the races; the horse is winning the race.
No doubt. You mentioned Polar Expedition, who was Illinois bred, right? He was.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a little Illinois, little tiny horse, and just a good race horse.
Like this one, right? I mean, it feels the same kind of story.
Yeah. Hotshot Anna was a little tiny filly. Shouldn't have been nearly as good as she was. She just was a very competitive horse. She knocked those big mares out of her way to get through.
She was great. I'm looking now at I just pulled up Polar Expedition, and he actually, you want to talk about ties that you've got now to Arlington Park history. He won in 96. He won the Washington Park Handicap.
Yes, he did. He won stakes 6 years consecutively. I think Jim Cody, who owned him, told me the only horse who had done that before him was Kelso, win stake races for six consecutive years.
Unbelievable. And I'm just looking. 93 started with the Arlington Washington Futurity as a 2-year-old. And then, of course, he ran, you know, he ran in the 3-year-old races. He won the Jim Beam in 94. So there's as a 3-year-old. And the Illinois Derby and Preakness didn't go great. But then you regrouped and came back later, let's see, as a 5-year-old. He won some handicaps at Sportsman's, and just kept, boy, just unbelievable. He just kept going. And then actually, amazingly, those last couple of years, he was as good as he ever was.
Yeah, he ran, I think when he was an 8-year-old, I ran him twice, and he won them both. They're both stakes. But he was a remarkable horse.
Won the about what? The
15
old,
hands tall and weighed about 800 pounds.
He was by Kodiak. He was out of a wing out mare, Wing C.
Yeah, had absolutely no breeding. I always kidded the guy whose farm he was on that he wasn't really by Kodiak. He was really by, who was the horse they kidnapped over in England or Ireland or what?
Shurgard.
What's that?
Shurgard.
Yeah. Shurgard, I said, and they never found him. I said, Shurgard must have wandered through your farm that spring and bred that mare.
That's pretty good.
He didn't like me saying that, but I did.
Wow. This wasn't your first grade one, is it, you?
What's that?
Was this your first grade one?
Yeah, this is my first grade one, yeah. I've won grade twos. I never won a grade one.
Unbelievable. That's also got to be a great feeling.
Well, it was. but actually, I didn't feel very well. I almost didn't come out for the race. I was in the hospital last week with diverticulitis, which is a very painful thing to have. And today's the first day I felt pretty good. I was still pretty ill the other day when he ran. In fact, I wasn't going to come out, even though I was just going to stay home and watch it on TV, and my wife shamed me into coming out. So I came out and put on my best pair of suspenders and came out.
Everybody got a big kick out of that, too, you. You look just like you look in the mornings when you come out, and there was no putting on airs.
You try not to.
I said that earlier we would talk about Wolf Racing. Talk about the partners, because they were just, there's a great video of them deliriously jumping up and down.
They're very good people. Very good people. They're from Nebraska, too, you know. They live here in Belvedere, Illinois now, but they're both originally from Nebraska. I think Kathy's father owned horses back there. I knew him. I didn't train for him, but a friend of mine did. And he had horses for years in Nebraska. And they're good people. They let me go to the sales and buy what I want. And then if I buy something they like and they want to buy half of it, they take half of it and say they never bother me about anything, have a good time with their horses. And we've been lucky, had a couple decent horses. So this is the best one we've ever had, but we had a filly, I still have her, that won a little stake at Hot Springs last year, Peace of My Heart. And so they've been fairly lucky in the game, too. They've had decent horses all the time.
Nice.
But, it's good to see good people be successful with these horses.
Yeah, exactly, and good horsemen. How firm is the plan moving forward with him?
With Emmy? Oh, yeah. I don't really know. He's going to get a little time off now because he had three hard races in a row, and though he came back fine, sound, and kept eating, but I'm not going to look for anything too rapidly with him. Just play it by ear.
Hugh Robertson with us, celebrating the Mr. D / Arlington Million win. And you did mention you've got a great name for that 2-year-old that's going to debut. He's a Daher colt, also for Wolf. Omaha Red. Tell me about the start this week.
Well, they named him, actually. They want to name him Omaha Red. I said, that's fine with me. He's a chestnut horse, and they're from Nebraska, where we all are. So they wanted that name. I said, that's fine with me. And he's a decent little colt. Daher, not a real good stud, but I wasn't there when we bought him. My son bought him. He said he really liked him, and he's distantly related to Hot Shot Anna. I think he's either out of a half sister, or maybe even a full sister to Anna. And Anna's dam had a baby at the sale, and Mac looked at him, but he went for $170,000 or something, and so we didn't buy him. But Mac says, you know, I like this Daher colt just as well, if not better, than the other one. So. And we bought, I gave a little more than I wanted to give for him, but looks like he'll be okay.
Well, he, as it happens, he's out of a Strong Hope mare and got a full sibling, a gelding from 5 years ago named One and Done, who made $250,000, won 9 times.
Oh, that mare has thrown some nice horses. I don't think many of them were, I don't know if any of them won stakes, but she's been a good producer.
Nice. And you're right about the Hot Shot Anna. This is a half-sister. Upsetter is the name, and a half-sister of Anna.
Yeah, I thought she was.
And also, as it happens, the mare, the dam, and Anna, and I didn't realize this, are half-sisters to our secret agent, that nice secret circle, Philly. That's yeah, that's one up at Woodbine. One, there's a stakes filly up at Woodbine.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, Paul Tackett raised her, and Paul Tackett doesn't raise very many, but he raises nice horses. I like buying from Paul.
That's another thing in the game, those kinds of relationships, you know, people that you can trust and you go back to, and when they tell you this is a good horse, straightforward, you know, you people you believe, that kind of relationship goes a long way.
That's true.
You, Robertson, I don't want to say that the biggest win of the career and that kind of thing, but it's got to be incredibly satisfying. And as many times as you've run races at Arlington, Hawthorne, Sportsman's, in all the big venues, throughout Mid-American racing, this. If this is the last of the millions, a very fitting ending. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You, Robertson, everybody, and what a treat to be able to catch up with you. We hadn't talked in a while. It seemed that whenever there was a hot shot and a conversation, Mac would join us. But so much respect for what you and Mac Robertson represent in this game, and it was on display.
Thanks a lot.
Not at all. Thank you, you Robertson, everybody. Let's take a break here. We're about 10 minutes into hour two. That was worth waiting for, and we're going to reach Lee Einsiedler, and I think Jeffrey's with him. I think they're coming back from driving back downstate from Saratoga, and Rich Migliori is, I think, went home after last night and now is on his way back to Saratoga. So we'll talk to Rich in a little bit. Larray Visaggi from Rock Ridge as well. We'll talk about the New York bread sale and more at the races. Sirius XM back after this.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Thoroughbred horse racing returns to the home state of Secretariat when Colonial Downs in Virginia conducts its summer season with a new afternoon racing schedule and minimum daily purses of $500,000. The season runs from July 19th to September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Mark your calendars for Colonial Downs' signature event, the Grade 3 Virginia Derby, on Tuesday, August 31st. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs now running Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons at 1:45 p.m.
Sirius XM Sports presents
At
the Races with Steve Bick.
And